till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see him. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
So many levels. So I'm going to be speaking this morning about Rachel Carson. And Rachel Carson published her book, Silent Spring. I think it was 1963, and she died a year later. And just speaking of her and her life, we didn't know what we had until she was gone. So when considering the theme for this month, attention, I came across the quote attributed to Rachel Carson that was used earlier. The more clearly we can focus our attention on the wonders and the realities of the world around us, the less taste we shall have for distortion. Finding a good quote is always a good way to start a sermon, but there was another reason that I wanted to speak about Rachel Carson. I hope you've noticed this new pamphlet that we have. I left a few copies out, and there are some by the door. It was prepared by my colleague, Stephen Epperson, from the church in Vancouver. And I was delighted to get it. I actually have a picture of me in here, but that's not the only reason I was delighted to get it. He has a page of some Unitarian Universalist historical figures. And I was looking through it, and there was Rachel Carson. And I thought to myself, I didn't know Rachel Carson was a Unitarian. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more, because I ended up going down the rabbit hole to find out a little bit more about Rachel Carson, and that ultimately led to the sermon this morning. As I refresh my memory about the life and times of Rachel Carson, and particularly her book, Silent Spring, I felt a connection to the times that we're living in now, to the nature of the ongoing battles for ecological preservation, for the strident voices on either side of the arguments. It's one of the goals of Unitarian Universalists to figure out how we can lead a good life. And Rachel Carson's life may help to point that way. When I was doing all of this, I was aware of Rachel Carson because the book was written at a pivotal time in my life when I was aware of what was going on. I was a student and active in a lot of different movements. But I had reason to talk to my daughter last night who's 30-something now and expecting my first grandchild. And I asked her, what do you know about Rachel Carson? And she said, Rachel who? I don't know anything about Rachel Carson. What do you know about the book Silent Spring? Never heard of it, Dad. So I feel like a parent, somehow I dropped the ball along the line. Rachel Carson is an undisputed hero as we look back at her life. She was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian award in the United States, by President Jimmy Carter. Rachel Carson's story deserves to be told and retold to our children. She was born in 1907 on a farm in Springdale, Pennsylvania. She was writing stories about animals at a very young age, and she had some published in a local magazine. Children have that ability to focus on the wonders and the realities of the world around them. It's an ability that I think doesn't get exercised enough in our children today. There are so many distractions with screens attached mainly. I remember as a child getting my own microscope and what a big deal that was, and putting things under there to look at. And in particularly growing cultures from pond scum, just going down and getting some water out of a pond and then looking at it under the microscope. It was absolutely amazing. Along the way, I learned some valuable lessons. One of them was, don't put a jar full of mosquito larvae under the kitchen sink. My mother opened the door and this swarm of mosquitoes filled the house. Rachel Carson started studying English at university, and then she switched to biology in her first year. But the English language and writing was really her strength, and would be shown in the books that she wrote and the many articles that she produced. She completed a master's degree in biology with the intention of going on to a doctorate, but she had to give that up to support her family and her aging mother during the Depression. She dropped out of her studies to take a temporary position as a writer with the U.S. Department of Fisheries. And she wrote and published many articles and 3 books. Under the Sea Wind in 1941, The Sea Around Us in 1951, The Edge of the Sea in 1953, and then the book that she's most remembered for, Silent Spring, in September of 1962. Silent Spring described the harmful effects of pesticides on the environment, and it's widely credited with helping launch the environmental movement as we know it today. It was more than that, however. The book called into question the idea of science as holding the key to human control over nature. According to the environmental engineer and Carson scholar H. Patricia Hines, Silent Spring altered the balance of power in the world. No one since would be able to sell pollution as a necessary underside of progress so easily or so uncritically. And I think now of the pulp mill under debate. Not that it's clear what should be done there, but it cannot be dealt with simply and uncritically. You can't just say, we need the jobs, don't worry about the environment. You have to, it's much more complicated. And that's the message that she brought to us. Silent Spring, this book was met by fierce opposition from chemical companies. They tried to have it stopped published, tried to stop the publishing of it. They threatened to sue those who were publishing it. Rachel Carson was vilified. She was called a spinster, a communist, a hysterical woman, an amateur naturalist who should stick to poetry and not politics. She was accused of being a fanatic defender of the cult of the balance of nature. The cult of the balance of nature. Whose teaching, if followed, would turn us back to the Dark Ages, a world where insects and vermin would once again inherit the earth. CBS Reports produced a 1-hour special, The Silent Spring of Rachel Carson, in which footage of Carson and the pesticide industry spokesman were edited so that it looked like a debate. They never debated directly, but it was one shot with a response. In the program, Carson sits on her porch wearing a shirt and a cardigan, and the chief spokesman for the insecticide industry, Robert White Stevens of American Cyanamid, wears thick black-rimmed glasses and a white coat, stands in a chemistry lab surrounded by beakers and Bunsen burners. White Stevens questions Carson's expertise. He says the major claims of Miss Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, are gross distortions of actual facts, completely unsupported by scientific experimental evidence and general practical experience in the field. And Carson responds, "Can anyone believe it is possible to lay down a barrage of poisons on the face of the earth without making it unfit for all of life?" White Stevens fumes. Miss Carson maintains that the balance of nature is a major force in the survival of man, whereas the modern chemist, the modern biologist, the scientist believes that man is steadily controlling nature. Carson rebuts. To these people, apparently, the balance of nature was something that was repealed as soon as man came on the scene. Well, you might just as well assume that you can repeal the law of gravity. Critics asserted that she was calling for the elimination of all pesticides, yet Carson made it clear that she was not advocating the banning or complete withdrawal of helpful pesticides, but was instead encouraging responsible and carefully managed use with an awareness of the chemical's impact on the entire ecosystem. When I went down that rabbit hole on Google, there are still people writing blogs today vilifying Rachel Carson, still saying that she was responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of, if not millions of people. And their logic is that in banning DDT, there was a period when the deaths from malaria actually increased. Rachel Carson had never said ban DDT for that use. But people went overboard and stopped using it entirely in some cases before they realized that it was still necessary in some areas for control. But this is such an old story, but those echoes of left and right and argument, counter-argument, go on today. The eventual outcome of her work would be regulation and better science to enable the benefits of pesticides while minimizing their deleterious effects. Although Silent Spring was met with fierce opposition by chemical companies, it spurred a reversal in the national pesticide policy, which led to a nationwide ban on DDT and some other pesticides. It also inspired the grassroots environmental movement and led directly to the creation of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. It took until 2012, ironically. Silent Spring was designated as a National Historic Chemical Landmark by none other than the American Chemical Society for its role in the development of the modern environmental movement. What makes this story so powerful, and it's powerful on so many levels, but Rachel Carson was battling breast cancer while she was writing Silent Spring. And she bravely appeared before Congress and before innumerable committees and made speaking tours defending her work while she was suffering terribly from the consequences of breast cancer and the treatments that she was going through. She died in April of 1964, less than a year after the book was released, and before major legislation changes that she had pushed for could be realized. So in my book, she's definitely a hero. But I asked my colleague, again, Stephen Epperson, was Rachel Carson really a Unitarian? The only reference that I could find to religion attributed to Rachel Carson is this little quote. "Of course, part of my trouble is finding anything definite that I can really feel is true. But I'm sure there is a great and mysterious force that we don't, and perhaps can never understand." She was a very private person who preferred not to join any organization, and as such, she was never likely to join a church as a member. However, late in her life, she became a very close friend with Reverend Duncan Howlett. He was the minister of the big All Souls Unitarian Church in Washington, D.C. After her last surgery for cancer, Rachel Carson phoned Reverend Howlett. And he recalls a very simple conversation in which Carson asked him if he would hold a memorial service for her at All Souls Unitarian Church when the time came. She gave no details, but simply wanted to be assured that he would do it. And Howlett asked no questions, knowing from her voice that she was gravely ill. He gave her his word, but it was not to be. This description from a biography of Rachel Carson by Linda Lear. Barely an hour after Rachel Carson's death from heart failure, mayhem broke out when Rachel's older brother, Robert, arrived to take charge. Although Rachel had left instructions to have her body cremated so that her ashes could be scattered in her beloved Maine, Robert, belligerent, rude, and insensitive to all, was no respecter of the wishes of his younger sister. He refused to allow cremation, and he sent the body to Joseph Gawler's Sons for preparation. Instead of a simple memorial service at All Souls, with Duncan Howlett, Robert planned an elaborate state funeral at the Washington National Cathedral, with William F. Creighton, the fourth Bishop of Washington, leading a group of distinguished mourners on Friday morning, April 17th. Duncan Howlett waited, but never received a call from the Carson family. Although denied the funeral she had requested, Reverend Howlett indicated the next Sunday's service, he dedicated the next Sunday's service to Rachel Carson. And he spoke these words. Last week, one of the true prophets of our time, Rachel Carson, died in Washington. She had asked me to read at her funeral service certain passages which expressed her philosophy. Her wish was denied. Therefore, I take this opportunity to do as I promised. And in her memory, I shall read a passage from her own hand, which expresses in a remarkable way the strength, the simplicity, and the serenity that marked her character. We're already familiar with the extraordinary depth of insight and the high poetic qualities that marked her published writings. Reverend Howlett then read the passage, "But most of all, I will remember the monarchs." The passage that we used earlier in our meditation today. The book closes with a little anecdote that I just wanted to share. A couple of distinguished people that attended the service at the cathedral in Washington, when they left the church, looked up, and there are these grand trees around the cathedral, and posted on the street were signs, no parking between 7 p.m. and 8 a.m. because the trees were being sprayed for pesticide. May we remember and honor the life of Rachel Carson, keeping her memory and her example alive for generations to come. May it be so. Amen.